I was asked to do a little clarifying on the homework. And in particular, I was asked to clarify alpha. Okay, so you recall, so again, now this is harkening back to before. Okay, so you recall when you're, and again, the homework, you're looking at a map with a cusp. Okay, but let me just say that everything you're doing is sort of in complete analogy with the map with the quadratic maximum. And you recall what you did then is, oh, what is this? Okay, so this is x, this is f of x. Okay, and so this is what we did before. Okay, and so now what you do here is then you go through and you find the values of mu, where you get the period doubling bifurcations. Now, when you have, and the thing about the quadratic maximum, which was nice, is that, you know, we could take the derivatives. Okay, and now you have this cuspy map, so it's sort of not quite so nice. The thing about the Taylor series is it all works out. So the thing is, it sort of the easiest way to find alpha just from the simulation is to sort of, you know, do the bifurcation diagram, okay? And I don't, you know, I haven't done this since in years. So I don't remember. Okay, so you do this, and then again there was this mu infinity, and I showed you the scaling of the orbits at mu infinity. Okay, well, that you should still see. You'll still see period doubling, and then you can sort of say, okay, there are two different things you can do, one of which is you can sort of just try blowing up the bifurcation diagram. And again, this direction is the direction where delta is determined, and this direction is the direction where alpha is determined. So, and you know, and so basically, again, you start at the top, and then you do the long period orbits, and then you find how close you get. And as the orbit period gets longer and longer, then alpha describes that. Or the other one is, again, you just blow up the bifurcation diagram itself, which is, in some sense, you don't have to solve any equations, but there you are. Okay, but it's harder to get accuracy. Okay, so there's this, and again, I don't expect you to get to the same accuracy as when you had the quadratic maximum, just because, again, there's this funny singularity up at the top, and it's not, you know, the mechanical machinery of taking the derivative is a little unclear. Okay, but you can do it just by looking at the bifurcation diagram and looking at the orbit at the value of mu infinity that you find. Okay, so that's sort of doing it the direct way. For then, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to look at the renormalization group equation and then solve for the universal function g when the universal function g is equal to, with g of x is equal to a naught plus, I don't know, it depends on what the we'll call this thing x. Well, no, we don't want to call it x. Alpha. No, that's a very bad choice of letter. We'll call it eta. Okay, a eta x to the eta plus dot, 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 dot. Okay, and so the point being eta here is now a fractional power. But then you can take this and then make, expand it out, match up coefficients, only now you have to figure out what eta is. Except you do know what eta is, right, because the problem says, okay, here, you know, here's this cusp and has a power, and so you say, okay, well, just like in the logistic map, the power here is 2. The power here will be whatever power is given to you in the problem. I forget what we call the power. Okay, so is that clear? Okay, and in terms of did that clarify? Okay, so Dennis thinks it's clear, so we're good. All right, so again, that was just on the basis of his read of a certain amount of confusion. Okay, and it is true that, you know, again, it's a little, you can't do the high resolution stuff doing the direct iteration in a simple way because that derivative is, anyway, yeah, okay. I mean, it may work, I just don't know for sure, and certainly if this cusp is sharp enough, then it won't work. But I think actually the whole thing still works Yeah, you know what? You can do the whole thing, as long as this cusp is not too sharp. So again, if you understood what went on here, you just do exactly the same things. And the only difference is that you just have a different Taylor series expansion. Okay, but you could probably even do it if you had a cusp that looked like this. But I've never done that. But I think we did it for the cusp where the, again, the point is that you need f prime of a half was equal to 0. And if this cusp is not too sharp, there's still a first derivative and you're good. Okay? So you can do everything, I think. As long as that, but I don't know whether if you make this cusp sharp enough, the whole thing falls apart or not. So you're encouraged to find out and tell me. Okay? All right. So so now on to Shannon entropy. Okay. Okay, and I started this last time in case you hadn't noticed. And again, what we're doing is we want to quantify information. Okay, and the setup is we have a set of n possible events and with probabilities of occurrence. P1 dot 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 Pn, okay, which are null. Okay, and now what we want to know, but then we want to define a measure, which we're going to call S, which is, you know, how much we learn when we find out that one event has been chosen. Okay, so that's the setup, and the requirements okay, is that one, S is continuous. Two, S monotonically increases with N if the N choices are equally likely. Okay, and then the third is, how's it stated? Is that, breaking down a choice into steps doesn't change S. Okay, and then the theorem is that S is equal to minus K PI log PI with K bigger than 0. Okay, so that I did the setup. Okay, and so now again, I think it's helpful to have a specific thing in mind. And so when you're doing the setup, I think the easiest thing to have in mind is choosing a number between 1 and 100, okay, where your numbers are equally likely, and then I learn what the number is, and I ask the question, well, what did I learn, okay, and how much information did I learn? Basically, again, your initial thing was, I know my numbers between 1 and 100, and I'm setting it up so that the numbers are all equally likely, so the P1, Pn are all 1 divided by 100. And then in the end, I know what number it is, okay? And so then, and basically it's sort of the difference between knowing my number is between 1 and 100 and knowing that my number is 54, okay? That's the setup. Okay, so so this is the, so step one of the proof is look at they look at the case where all the p's are equal to 1 over n. Okay, so, and then just for notation, we're going to call that thing A of n. Okay, so it really is exactly the pick a number problem. Okay, and so now the thing is that for this, in order for 3, you must have A of n is equal to k log n for k bigger than 0. Okay. So, and in some sense, this is the whole key, right? Okay. That once you see the log coming out, then everything else is pretty straightforward. Okay. So let me again illustrate this by choosing a number between 1 and 8. Okay. And again, using the usual 20 questions approach. Okay, so one way to do this is I just have my number, and then the number is 7. Okay, let's say I picked 7. Okay, and so that's like a one-step choosing process, and that is A of 8. Is I had 8 numbers and I picked 1. Okay, again, assuming that I'm doing it randomly. Okay, but then again, if I'm doing this in the finding it out in the 20 questions kind of way, I say, all right, well, is the number, you know, bigger than 4? Okay, and so what happens is that then I have 1, 2, 3, 4 here, 5, 6, 7, 8 here, and, you know, and again, with equal probability, it can be one or the other, and so I make a choice. So I started off with it being anything between 1 and 8, and then it goes down here, and what I've done is I've picked one out of 2 equally likely possibilities. Okay, so when I did this step of the choice, I'm picking, it's A of 2, right? Because I'm picking one of 2 equally likely possibilities. Okay, so now I've gone down to here, and then I say, well, okay, I have now, I can say, well, is it 5 or 6, or is it in 7 and or 8? And again, you say, well, it's bigger than 6, right? Okay, and so now I'm doing a temporally separated second choice. And so now, again, the amount of information I got from going from here to here is A of 2, again, because I'm taking one of 2 equally likely choices. And then I do the same thing again, where then here it goes to 7. And again, I picked one of 2 equally likely choices. And so the amount of information I did going down this path is A of 2 plus A of 2 plus A of 2. And again, it has to be plus because I picked one. Then I picked the other. And in each case, I learned that I got one, you know, I picked which one of 2 equally likely choices was chosen by the person who chose the number. Okay, so this, going down this path, the information is 3 times A of 2. Okay, and so I have A of 8 is equal to 3 times N of 2, A of 2. And that's exactly this, right? If I have, I haven't done it. So let me write it. I'll put it over here. So, oh no, here it is. Okay, so, A of 8 is equal to 3 times A of 2, but 8 is equal to 2 to the third. Okay, and so what that says is how do I want to put this? I'm just trying to think of the best. How do I show you that that is the log? I can say A 2 to the third is equal to 3 times A of 2. And so this says that now I'm putting N to the Y is equal to Y A of N. Okay, and now you see that this is true for A of I don't know, m is equal to some constant times log m. Okay. So, and so I did it with 8 and 2. Okay, but this obviously works, right? That whenever I have a situation where I have, I'm in the wrong spot. No wonder. I'm sorry. No wonder I'm having trouble here. I wrote down the wrong thing. This is all true. Okay, but the statement is a s to the m is equal to, m a of x. Okay, and there, that's all I'm showing. This is the final result. I have to show you the first result. The first result is, again, if you have an integer number of choices, because then you know what you're talking about. You know, you're picking, we're looking at equally likely choices, a finite number, and then you iterate that some fixed number of times, then, again, that's the same as taking that finite number of choices and adding them, because you break it down into the steps. So that if s is an integer and m is an integer, this is this. Okay, and that corresponds exactly to this. So let me get rid of this. Okay, this is the point. This is with the illustration. But then you can do this argument where instead of picking two choices, I pick out of three choices. But whenever I do this iterated, I pick, you know, let's say I pick three out of three choices twice. Then again, I have A of 3, and then I do it again. I have A of 3. And that's the same as picking once out of 9 choices. Okay, so that is this. Okay, so you need to be happy about that. So I'm sorry I wrote down the wrong equation at one point. But is this clear why this is true? Okay. Okay. So okay, and so now the problem with this in terms of being done is that, you know, these are all integers. Okay. So and so now what you want to do is sort of be able to look at all the things that aren't integers. Okay. All right, so hold on. Okay, so now the point is the following. I'm gonna erase on the other side. Okay. Okay. Okay, so let me just say that this breaking down of the choices then tells you what the entropy has to be in this very specific case of, you know, I have a thing where, you know, it's I have a power of an integer, okay, and then I say if I have a power of an integer, then I can relate the entropy to the entropy of the integer just by multiplying. Okay, and so, and again, that's just because of this breaking down of the steps. So that's where number 3 has come in. Now we're going to use continuity to do everything else. Okay, again, the second one about the more choice with more options is a statement about the sine of k. All right. Okay, so now we're going to ask about, well, we've done A, again, where s, you know, you have s to a power, but now we got to sort of figure out what happens when s is not an integer, okay? And so so what we're going to do here is, again, we're going to be relating different numbers so that we can go from powers of integers where we don't know what happens to each individual integer to relating the integers to each other, okay? So the next step is we're going to be using the continuity, okay? And again, it sort of makes sense in the sense of saying, well, okay, we just want to sort of generate a function that's smooth because somehow we say, you know, if you change the probabilities only a little bit, then the entropy should only change a little bit. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to choose integers. Okay, and now we've got enormous numbers of integers. We have A, B, S, and T. Okay, and now what we're going to do is we're going to look at a to the s, And again, this is an integer, some giant integer, okay? And then we're going to have, and again, this is the point where I've only related, I say, given A of S, okay, I can now, I say, if I knew A of S, I would know the entropy for powers of S, okay? But now what we have to do is we have to relate the entropy for different integers, okay? And so we have A to the S, okay, which is, you know, again, the entropy for one value, and then we have B to the T, and then we have less than A to the T plus 1. Okay, so there are integers. So basically, for any A and any B, you sort of fiddle with the S and the, oh, S plus 1. You fiddle with the S and the T, so this is true. Okay, so for instance, let's let A equals 2 and B equals 3. Okay, so and so basically what you do is you say, all right, well, let's let T be 3. So 3 cubed is 27. And so then you're looking for a power of 2 that is less than 27, and when you add one more to it, it's more than 27. Okay, so then this case, S would be 4, and S plus 1 would be 5. Okay, and so basically, I have B to the T, and you know, I pick A and B, then I pick a T, and given a T, then I can always pick an S and an S plus 1, and it's sort of intuitively true, but it's proven, you know, in number theory that this is always true. Okay, so I can always do this. And again, why am I doing this? Is because what I did in the first step was I just said, okay, I've got, you know, this number of choices that is a perfect power, right? And if it's a perfect power, then I can break it down into successive choices. And then continuity, I'm going to use continuity to get the whole functional form. Okay, so if this is true, then what I have here is I can take the log of the thing. So I have S log A is less than T log B, and that's less than S plus 1 log A, okay? And now I am going to divide through, okay? And so I have S divided by T log A is less than log B is less than S plus 1 divided by T log A, and now I'm going to divide through by log B. Now you're going to hate this. Okay, so I'm going to divide by log B and then multiply by T over S. So I have log A divided by log B is less than T divided by S is less than S plus 1 divided by S log A by log B. Okay, so that's okay. So I just took this and then I took a log. Okay, now the point is that I look at this, and because of this ordering and because of the assumption that if I have more choices, because I'm still in the situation where I'm just looking at equally likely choices, I know that A of A to the S is less than A of B to the T and less than A of A to the S plus 1. Okay, so this is just coming from the fact that this is bigger than this is bigger than this, and then we said more choices out of equally likely probabilities, and your information goes up. Okay, so and now we go back to this thing, which I showed you before, and so then we have S A of A is less than T A of B, which is less than S plus 1 A of A, okay? And now I can divide this thing through by, what do I want to divide it through by? A of B, okay? So let me go, I'm going to go over here now. Okay. And so now, I'll write this just because I know I'm going to write. S of A is less than T, A of B is less than S plus 1, A of A. Okay, now I divide through by A of B. And I've got A of A divided by A of B. Okay, divide through is less than T to the S. So what I did here is I divided by S and I divided by A of B. And that is equal to S plus 1 divided by S, A of A, A of B. Okay, so we've got two inequalities here. All right? And so inequality 1 is A of A divided by A of B is less than log A divided by log B, 1 plus 1 over S. And inequality 2 is A of A divided by A of B is greater than log A divided by log B divided by 1 plus 1 over S. Okay, so is it clear where that came from? Okay, and so now this is true for any S. True for any S. And in particular, it's true as S becomes large. Okay, and so the only way these inequalities can be true simultaneously is A of A divided by A of B is equal to log A divided by log. Okay, all right. And so, therefore, we can say, well, let's just pick A of some constant. And again, if you're doing information theory, you would just say, well, let's just let A of 2 be our constant K. Then this immediately says that A of B is log 2, A of A is equal to K log A. Okay, so that's the information if the choices are all equally likely. It's just the logarithm of the number of choices. Okay, and again, K is equal to A of A divided by log B for some B. Okay, and again, in the typical thing in information theory is to choose B to be 2. Okay, so and so again, that is that's one derivation. Okay, there's another derivation which I'm going to do for you again, just because the derivation is useful. I mean, the method is useful, so it's a slightly different thing. It's not as good of a derivation as Shannon's in the sense that it assumes that S is differentiable and not just continuous. Shannon is sort of minimal in the sense that he only, yeah.
B over long B?
I wrote A of B. Did I write it wrong in my notes? Yes, it's wrong in the notes. Okay, let me fix the notes. Sorry about that. Okay. All right. So, okay. And so I'm going to do a different one. Oh, yeah.
By choosing integers A, B, and S, T such that that first equation inequality that holds. Now, why are you taking S to be arbitrary? Because the choice of S is set by A, B, and C.
Oh, well, okay. One way of saying it is, well, I can make T bigger. Okay. So, so the point is the thing came out where T got eliminated. T sort of goes away at this point. So when I explain it to you, I put it in terms of T, because when you're sort of picking S and S plus 1, it's easiest to think you pick T. But now make T big. If T is big, then S is big. Okay, and then you're good. Okay. All right, are there any other questions about this? Okay, so I'll do the other derivation. Okay, which again, it's a different style. Okay, and so, now again, we've got this property 3, and the property 3 is that I can break down a choice into two sub-choices. And, so an alternative proof. And again, it uses methods that come up a lot, so I'll do it. So you start with this. A of MM is equal to AM plus plus A of n. Okay, so again, we're still in the world of equally likely choices, and what happens is that, again, I have, well, let's say I do 2 and 3, right? If I have 6 choices, okay, again, what I can do is I can divide that up into a first choice between equally likely alternatives, and then, you know, and then going down here, a second choice between equally likely alternatives where there are m of these and n of these. Okay, so the breaking up of the choices implies this. Is that clear? Okay, so okay, and so if I just start with this equation, I say, okay, then I can say let x equals log m and y equals log n. Okay. And again, now I'm going to assume it's differentiable. Okay. And okay, and so now, and then I also have to do one other thing. I have to define a of x with a tilde equals a e to the x. What? A of, oh, a of e to the x. Okay. All right. So what I've got here is I have a of x plus y is equal to, yes, a of x plus a of y. Okay. All right, wait, and there's another misprint in the notes. Let me write. Okay. Okay, and again, this is quite a standard trick that comes up a lot, so that's why I'm doing this for you. Okay, and so I've got this equation. Okay, and again, if you do the product and the log thing. And so again, whenever you see a product thing happening like this, then you know to change variables to the log. Okay, so you do this thing, and then let's take d by dx of it. D by dx of a of x plus y is equal to dA dx, and this holds for all x, for all y, okay? So, but you see, the right-hand side is independent of y, okay? And so that means that, let's integrate this up with respect to y. It means that a, dA dx is independent. Oh, it's true for all y. For all, it's true for all y. And so that means that it must be independent of x. Okay, because of because the right hand side explicitly doesn't depend on y, and the right hand. Oh, I have to explain this. Okay, so this obviously is just dA dx, dx. Okay, there's no y at all on the right-hand side. But I can always change the argument, right? So if I set y to be 10, then this is d by dx of a of 10 is equal to dA of 0 dx. Okay, so what this says is that dA dx is independent of x. Okay, or I guess another way of saying it is I could let, that's the best way of saying it, I think, because the point is that y, I can just move my x arbitrarily by changing y, and the right-hand side doesn't change, and so therefore the left-hand side doesn't change, and so the left-hand side must be independent of the argument. Okay, and so that says dA dx is independent of x, and that says that a of x is equal to kx plus b, where, k is a constant, and b is a constant, and so now I just plug in for x. Okay, and so this is equal to k, a of m is equal to k log m plus b. Okay, and so now I'm almost done to where I was before, except that I've got this b, you know, the constant of integration, but now I just plug it back into the original equation. I have k log m n plus b is equal to k log m plus b plus k log n plus b. And then that implies that b is equal to 2b, or b equals 0. Okay, and so again, we have, we've got, I didn't write it down, so I better write it down. Oh no, here it is. We've got this. A of A is equal to K log A. Okay, so, and yeah.
Of integer, a log of integer. How do you define the limit where you can make x?
Okay, right, so the point is here, okay? A and B are integers, okay? But you're taking the ratios of them. Okay, so again, if I know, how do I want to say this? Okay, this is log of an integer, and this is log of an integer, all right? But what I can do is, again, by continuity, by sandwiching this thing, it says that, I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. So wait, hold on. I think this is the best way of putting it. I mean, in some sense, that's why I did this, because, you know, this... Each of these is sort of miraculous in their own way. Okay, and this one is, you know, again, just sort of the statement that this is always true in that you require it to be differentiable is the thing. So what happens here, again, is, okay, so what happens is that if step one, I have 2 and I have 4, I have 8, I have powers of 2, okay? And then I've got 3 and 9 and 27, okay? And I don't know what A of 2 is and I don't know what A of 3 is. But this is sort of saying, but they have to interleave appropriately because when I get way out there at the very high numbers, they're in between, okay? And that's where the continuity comes from. And so it's because of the fact that you have A is huge, A of A is huge, A of B is huge, but the difference, and essentially it's because the way it comes out, this is not totally satisfying, but the information itself is only growing logarithmically, and so even though these numbers are getting bigger and bigger, you can always find something in between, and so you're squashing down the difference, okay? And so, and that's sort of the point, is that it's, you know, if you try to get a thing that wasn't log, then basically you would just take a high power of it by, you know, iterating the choice many times, and it just wouldn't fit in with the other things. So once you have one, and you say, and you define the information of two choices to be a number, then everything else is determined. So you see, so the way to think about it is that I do this and I don't know what A of 2 is, okay? That's sort of arbitrary, but given A of 2, then because I can keep taking powers of 2, that fixes the information of all the other integers. Okay, and once I fix the information of all the other integers, then again, you know, if I had a fraction that was wrong, I would then again take these fractions. And again, the way you get fractional choices is just by having unequal probabilities. But you could imagine doing it with a fraction. And again, it just wouldn't fit in properly. Okay, so that's about as good as I can do on this one. But your question's a really good, I mean, I love your question because that was why I did this. You see what I mean? Okay. And again, it's not as strong as Shannon's because it is, I take a derivative. Okay. But then if you say, well, I want the thing to be differentiable, then you see what I mean? That any differentiable function of this form works. And again, it's just sort of this miracle of the logs where you can, I don't know what else to say about it. This one doesn't have, you know, this is fishy. This looks fishy in different ways. This is a legitimate thing. This is used a lot. But it looks fishy, right? But not in the same way as this one looks fishy. But they're both actually completely correct. But it's unintuitive. I mean, the answer to your question, I guess, is just it's unintuitive, and that's why I wanted to show you two different unintuitive proofs of the same result, because neither one of them is obvious. Okay? All right, so I am sorry that's not a better answer. But the good news is you'd say, oh my God, you took a whole lecture on equal probabilities, but it turns out that now I want to get to unequal probabilities. And it turns out that's not a big deal. Okay, so let me show you how you do that. Okay. And basically what you do is, and again, now there are all sorts of questions that come up when you're taking the limit of infinite numbers of choices, but I'm not going to do any of that here. I'm going to just look at, you know, finite number probabilities. And so now consider pi that are not all equal. Okay. Okay, and now, so what do you do? Okay, and so now what you do is you say, well, okay, let's consider only rational pi. Okay, and because this is, again, where the assumption of continuity is very important, because, you know, the rationals are dense, and if it's continuous, then if you can prove it for all the rationals, you're done. Okay, and so let's let pi equal ni divided by the sum over ni. Okay, and so now let me go back to the numbers between 1 and 100. I'm not gonna, and let's do 10. Okay, and so what you can do is you can say, well, what I did before is I did 8, right, and then I divided them up into 2s and 2s and 2s. But I could say, well, all right, well, suppose I do this, okay? I divide it up this way. That my first choice is, you know, is it in this, or this? Okay, and here P1 is equal to 1/2. Here P2 is equal to 3/10. And P3 is equal to 1/5, okay? And now I have unequal probabilities. But what I did is I just sort of divide up each one into some quantum of, you know, if you write it this way, then the point is I say, well, I thought I had three choices. Is it in column A, B, or C with different probabilities? But I could say, well, okay, no, but I'm going to divide up each of the columns until I end up with a system with equally likely choices. But I, you know, so step one is which is the of the unequal probabilities do I have? But then step two is which one in this, you know, clump of numbers is the number that actually got picked. Okay, and again, now I go back to that first assumption, well, whatever, I think it's number one. The first assumption that says, okay, well, I got to get the same answer, right? Because in the end, I picked a number between 1 and 10, okay? And so the amount I learned from picking, you know, from learning what the number I picked was has to be the same whether or not I look at the clumps or whether, and then find out which number in the clump it is, or whether I just find out what the number is, okay? So now what we're going to do is sort of, you know, relate the information gained after the first step where there are unequal probabilities involved in terms of knowing that if I do that plus the second step where now, again, I'm picking out of equally likely choices, and I know the information because I just derived it, that tells me what the information is for unequally likely choices. Okay, so let me just write the equation for that. Hopefully it will become clear. Okay? Okay, and so again, now I choose my probabilities to be this, and what I want to determine is want to find S of P1 Pn. Okay, and what I'm going to do again is it's going to be the middle stage of a two-step process. Okay, so again, what I do then is, you know, again, I have a situation where I have, you know, certain lumps, and the lumps have different probabilities, and then I'm just going to divide the thing up so that there are a large number of pieces that are all equal, and if I've got equal probability pieces, I know what to do because I just derived it, okay? So this, I say, is that I have k log, okay, I and I, okay, And I had this sort of horrible feeling. Sometimes I use natural log, and sometimes I use just the word log, which doesn't specify. But it doesn't matter. I mean, just K covers all that. OK, so this is, again, the choosing which one out of these it is. OK, this is just choosing the number. This is equal to S P1 PN, OK, plus, OK. And so again, this is the first choice, is choosing the blob. And then the second choice is choosing which number out of the blob you picked. OK, and so that is equal to I. P I log N I. Okay. Okay. And so now I got to solve it for S. Okay. So is it clear what the setup is? That I haven't done anything. I mean, well, I've done something, but it's all kosher. All right. Okay. And so now I just solve this thing for S of P one P N. Okay. And so now I wrote this. OK, so now I've got, I forgot the log here. You should have seen them before this, before I proofread them. They were even worse. OK, so I've got log I and I. OK, and and now that's times 1, but I'm going to write this as the sum of pi. Okay, so that's, this is equal to this, okay, where I replaced 1 by the sum of the pi's because they sum to 1. Okay, minus, okay, and I pull this on the other side, pi log pi, pi log ni, okay, and now this is equal to minus k sum over I, pi, and then this is just log n I divided by the sum of the n I, and that's just equal to minus k sum over I, pi, log pi. Okay, and that's the answer. Yeah. Oh,
there's a, sorry.
Sorry. Now is it wrong in the notes? Now that was right in the notes, but I'll fix the notes. Okay. Yeah. And then, because again, this is just, you're picking, you know, one out of the large number of equally likely possibilities. Here, you're taking each subset and picking equally likely possibilities out of each subset, and then you're summing over the subsets. And then the intermediate choice has to be such that the information doesn't care, right, that you get the same answer from the information, and then you get this. And again, you can hit any rational this way, and therefore, if you can hit any rational by the continuity assumption, then you've proven that it's good for everything. Okay? So that's it for the derivation. So, but then next time I'll do the statistical mechanics, but yeah. Here? Here? Oh, okay. Because, wait a minute. This is, oh, right. Thank you. I had a probability. So now again, you want to say, you know, I had a probability of picking this one. Okay. And I'm assuming everything, you know, and I'm assuming everything is, you know, equally likely within it. So my probability of going down this path is 1/2. Okay. And that's this pi here. Okay, you see what I mean? That if I go down this path, then the information that I still have left to discover is log 5. If I go down this path, the information I have left to discover is log 3, right? And or k log 3. Okay, and but the probability of going down this path is p1, and the probability of going this path is p2. And so if I think about, you know, doing the same thing lots of times, then that's where that pi comes from, because I have to go down some path. But, you know, if I have a, you know, if I just had 1 here, then, you know, I'd have, like, probability 1/10 of going down that path. Okay. And so that's where this PI comes from. Sorry, because I was trying to be, like, super clear. Pedantic was my, I was trying to be pedantic. But, of course, with the typos, it makes it less pedantic, but so. Sorry about that. Okay, and so that's where this comes from. Okay, and so again, the point is that once you realize, once you can do, and again, this was sort of the surprise of the thing at some level, is that, you know, once you know that you have this sort of, you can do everything, right? Okay, and getting to arbitrary probabilities is not a problem. Okay, so Shannon's paper, you know, again, this is a little appendix of this, but I think it's really quite remarkable. And in his paper, then, he uses this to, you know, study capacities of coding channels. But I'm not going to do that. I mean, I'm just going to then, next time, I will go back and sort of show you the interpretation of the statistical mechanical ensembles using information theory. You know, just, it's just an interpretation, but it's very handy and really sort of makes it very natural. It's a natural way of thinking about things. And then I think I'll be able to do all of that next time. And then there's going to be a little bit about dynamics, okay? And the dynamics is basically going to come up in the game theory. And again, so that's why I wanted to introduce you to the concepts. Okay, so I'll stop there.
Hey,